bald head. The men flattened to either side of the window. Evan told his heartbeat to stay slow and steady, and it obeyed. He didn't recognize either man. Van Sciver had sent more freelance muscle. The gunman raised a black-gloved hand, his ridged, shiny skull gleaming as he did a three-finger countdown. The other guy jammed the crowbar beneath the sash window and slid it up. The bald man spun into the open frame, pistol raised, his mouth moving, issuing orders. The streetlight sensor was too far away to capture the words, but a moment later David Smith appeared at the sill, holding his hands before him, showing his palms. He looked more shocked than scared. The bald man grabbed the boy's shirt and ripped him through the window. As he manhandled the kid away from the building, another figure emerged at the edge of the screen, her back to the camera. Her face wasn't visible, but Evan recognized her form. Orphan V. Candy McClure pointed at the gunman, clearly issuing an admonition, and he lightened his grip on the boy. The freelancers kept David between them, hustling him away. An instant later, the frame was as empty and serene as before. The snatch-and-go had taken 6 seconds. Evan looked at Joey across the console. Seems like they want to keep him. Or kill him off-site. No, Evan said. You saw the way Orphan V spoke to that guy. Van Sciver wants the kid unharmed. Or she does. She might have to duke it out with Van Sciver. She can be convincing, Evan said. Joey read something in his face and let the point drop. She leaned over, bringing up a freeze frame of the men standing on both sides of the window before the break-in. Reference points littered their heads, a digital overlay. I go with Panasonic Face Pro facial recognition, she said. It's the best. 2 for 2. 2 for 2. Fast and accurate. They use it at SFO. When do we get the results? We have them. Another window. Another revelation. The two men, identified as Paul Delmonico and Shane Shea. Delmonico was the one who'd jimmied the window, and Shea the gunman. Shea had a bony build, his forehead prominent, the grooves of his cranial bones pronounced on his shiny, bald skull. Their records had recently been classified top secret, which put their backgrounds and training out of reach for the time being. Evan figured they were dishonorably discharged recon marines, Van Sciver's favorite source of renewable muscle. For now, Evan and Joey had faces and names, and that was all they needed. Next, Joey pulled up a United Airlines itinerary she had unearthed. They came in on a flight this morning from Alabama, where Van Sciver killed Orphan C, and where Jack had plowed into the dirt from 16,000 feet. Right, and they rented this at the airport. Click. A black Suburban. I know. Inventive, right? License plate VBK5976. She paused to check if he was impressed. He was. The same credit card was used to get another matching Suburban, license plate TLY9443. So I'm thinking 4 men. Looks like it, Evan said. You know what ALPR is? She asked. Automated license plate recognition, Evan said, relieved to be back on familiar turf. Police cruisers have sensors embedded in the light bars that scan the plates of all surrounding vehicles. They can swallow numbers 8 lanes across on cars going in either direction up to 80 miles per hour. They process the plates for outstanding warrants in real time and store them for posterity. Gold star for the old guy, Joey said. I already input the licenses into the ALPR system and coded the system to send me and only me an alert when one of the light bar sensors picks up either Suburban. We're going to use Virginia's finest to track down these guys for us. Her grin took on a devious cast, in more ways than one. Evan followed her gaze up the street to the courthouse. It was a beautiful colonial revival building, weathered brick, white columns, hipped roof. A trickle of men and women scurried across the front lawn, some black, some white, some in suits, others in overalls, each of them moving with a sense of purpose. A sign in front read, Criminal General District Court. Oh, Evan said. Oh. Already Joey was pulling up the courthouse's private Wi-Fi network, reserved for judges, DAs, and clerks. Hashkiller's 131 billion password dictionary required only 27 seconds to get her on. The records management system took 2.5 minutes, and then there it was before them on the screen, glowing like a holy relic. A bench warrant. Evan and Joey smiled at each other. "First move," Joey said. "Get the bad guys off the street. Or at least the two we have names for." "You're kind of a genius." "I agree with everything but the kind of." She wiggled her fingers in glee and then typed in a phony case record. If the cops brought in the men, red tape confusion would tangle them up for days. "What should we have them arrested for?" Joey asked. "Homegrown terrorism is always good. Gets the local constabulary all hot and bothered." "Terrorism?" Evan said. "Delmonico and Shay?" "You have a point." "Let's make them pedophiles," Evan said. She typed, her smile growing broader as she warmed to the idea. "And prison escapees, who are also wanted for killing a police officer." "That is so the best hat trick," she said. "It's like making a list for Santa." She finished filling out the arrest warrant, issued a statewide BOLO, and fed the forms into the legal and law enforcement machinery of Greater Richmond. Then she held up her palm. He slapped it. 51. Push a little more. Candy's back was on fire, but she granted her skin no concessions when on a mission. She refused to scratch it, even resisted tugging at her shirt so the fabric would rub against the ruinous flesh and soothe the burn. Candy had pulled Van Sciver into the hall of the safe house to talk to him privately. Van Sciver was as unyielding a man as she had ever encountered, but he was still a man, which meant she had a shot at getting what she wanted from him. He'd pulled his pistol out of his underarm tension holster, an FNX-45 with a threaded barrel and holographic red dot sights. A lot of firepower for the skull of a 13-year-old. "The hard part's over," Van Sciver said. "We have him now. X knows it, or will soon enough. The kid's served his purpose." Van Sciver's eyes twitched across the threshold to where David Smith sat on the decline bench, a pillowcase cinched over his head, hands pressed between his knees. He hadn't made a noise since Delmonico and Shay had delivered him. The two men stood by the rear door, guarding it with M4s in case the skinny 13-year-old kid went Dwayne the Rock Johnson on them. The other pair patrolled the front of the house, as if working perimeter duty at a presidential inauguration. L's corpse had been removed, the spillage from his body more or less cleaned up, though the smell of vomit lingered. Over in the kitchen, Thornhill stirred something in a pot, humming to himself. It smelled delicious and spicy, and Candy wondered where Thornhill was from, how he'd learned to cook and who for. It brought back a memory from high-altitude seer training in her 17th year. She'd summited a tree-blanketed rise in the Rockies, nearly stumbling onto a family of four picnicking out of the back of their Range Rover. The mom had laid down a blanket, and there were sliced apples in bowls and cold fried chicken and thermoses of hot cider. The daughter was around Candy's age. Candy had hidden behind the tree line, staring down at the exotic sight before her, scarcely breathing, lest she spook them. She'd remained long after they'd driven off, her boots embedded in a film of snow, trying to loose the tangle of emotions that had knotted up her throat. Thornhill lifted the wooden spoon for a taste, smacked his lips at a job well done. In a holster snugged to his hip, he had an FNX-45 that matched Van Sciver's. He was so disarming that it was easy to forget how lethal he was. With Thornhill, it was a pleasant conversation, right up until the minute the bullet entered your brain. Candy refocused on Van Sciver, keeping her voice low. "I'm saying let's not have a failure of imagination here." "Which means what, precisely?" "L took the kid out of circulation, and Jack kept him off the books after that. David Smith has got no real record, no files, no fingerprints, nothing. Aside from a few kids in a loony ward, no one knows his face." She paused for dramatic effect, pursed her distractingly plump lips. "Which means he's a blank check." Van Sciver's fair-complected face was mottled from the exertion of the past 24 hours, splotches of red creeping up from his shirt collar. That blown pupil was like a void. Candy felt that if she stared long enough, she might fall into it and keep tumbling. She thought of the beautiful young woman locked in a car trunk in an alley outside Sevastopol, the rattle of her fists against the metal as she bled out, the scraping of her nails. Candy shuddered off the thought, looked away from Van Sciver's lopsided gaze so he couldn't read anything in her face. The pillowcase fluttered in the spot where the boy's mouth was, the fabric pulsing like a heartbeat, surprisingly steady. "Ella acquired him for you initially," she said. "Now you have your asset back." What if Jack Johns turned him? Jack Johns only had him a few months before dumping him at that facility. Not enough to fully indoctrinate him. But the kid did get the benefit of Johns's training. Johns is good at that. Maybe the best. Van Sciver gritted his teeth, neither confirming nor denying. "What are you suggesting?" "After we get X, we pick up with the kid where L and Jack left off. I don't have the time or interest to train some boy myself. I'll do it, assuming he's the right material." The dilated pupil pegged her where she stood, that weird, hazy starfish floating in the depths. She wasn't sure where to look. Van Sciver said, "This have to do with Sevastopol. Dead girl in the alley?" "Of course not." She hoped she hadn't rushed the words. "We need more arrows in our quill." She pointed into the living room. "And that could be one of them." Van Sciver's jaw shifted to the side and back. He holstered his .45. Candy did not let him see her exhale. He tugged a red-covered notebook from one of his wide cargo pockets and flipped it open. Inside were various intel scribblings and the list of 5 names. Orphan J, Orphan C, Orphan L, all crossed out. And Joey Morales, circled twice. And David Smith. Van Sciver removed a Pilot Friction pen from the fold and erased the boy's name. He lifted that bottomless stare to Candy. Then he tossed the notebook onto a side table and walked into the living room. The former Marines stood at attention, the way former Marines did. Thornhill pulled the pot off the stove to cool, came around to confer with Candy and Van Sciver. Van Sciver said, "You got the propofol?" Thornhill flashed that million-dollar grin. "Now it's a party." He went to a black medical kit and came up with a syringe filled with a cloudy white liquid. They didn't call it milk of amnesia for nothing. The medication provided a quick knockout and a rapid, clear recovery. Push a little, it was an anesthetic. Push a little more, and you had a lethal injection. In all matters, Van Sciver strove to have a full range of choices. How the boy responded in the next few minutes would determine how much pressure Thornhill's thumb applied to the plunger. Candy found herself biting the inside of her cheek. Van Sciver walked over to the boy and tugged off the pillowcase. David Smith blew his lank bangs off his forehead and took in the plywood-covered windows, the empty jugs of water, the fresh plastic tarp on the floor. Then he squinted up at Van Sciver. "Is this a test?" he asked. 52. Chess Matching. Evan didn't want to risk checking into a motel. Not when he and Joey were this close to Van Sciver. Not when Van Sciver knew he was coming. Instead, he used a false Airbnb profile to book a room for $49 a night. The owner, who listed several dozen apartments in seedy sections of Greater Virginia, seemed to be a digital slumlord who oversaw his holdings from afar. The key waited inside a realtor lockbox hooked around the front doorknob. The neighbors would be accustomed to high turnover, lots of renters coming and going. Which was good, since Evan's profile represented him as Susie Orton, a robust middle-aged blonde with a forceful smile. The L-shaped complex had seen better days. Paint flaked on the fence around the pool out front, which had algaed itself to a Gatorade shade of green. A cluster of shirtless young men wearing calf-length charcoal denim shorts smoked blunts on strappy lawn chairs. Several of the doors remained open, women, and one fine-boned young man lingering at the thresholds in off-the-shoulder tops, offering more than just a view. The thrumming bass of a remix rattled a window on the second floor. Pumping music, paired with the scattered regulars at the fringes, gave the place the woeful feel of a sparse dance floor at a club that couldn't get up steam. It was dusk by the time Evan had completed his second drive-by and parked the minivan several blocks away. He and Joey moved unnoticed up the sidewalk, and then the corridor. Evan punched in the code to free the keys. He handed one to Joey, turning the other in the lock, and they stepped into a surprisingly clean small room with two freshly made twin beds. He tossed his stuff onto the mattress closer to the door as Joey plugged in her laptop, and then checked her phone for the 50th time for updates. She grabbed a change of clothes from her bag and went to shower as Evan worked out. Push-ups, sit-ups, dips with his heels on the windowsill and his hands ledging the seat of the solitary chair. Joey came out, sweeping her hair up into a towel, and he turnstiled past her in the tight space. When he finished showering and emerged from the bathroom, she was at the laptop again, chewing her lip. He checked his room zone to see if Javier had called. He hadn't. Evan used the wall to stretch out the tendons of his right shoulder, almost back to full range of motion. It occurred to him that neither he nor Joey had uttered a word in the preceding 45 minutes, and yet the silence had been comfortable, pleasant even. It reminded him of when he was a kid, walking around the farmhouse with Jack, wiping the counters, taking turns on the pull-up bar by the side of the house, filling Strider's water bowl. At times Jack and he cooked, ate, and cleared an entire meal without a word passing between them. They were so in sync that they didn't need to speak. Joey looked over from the bluish screen, saw Evan watching her. That dimple floated in her wide cheek. She said, "What are you thinking about?" "Nothing," he said. They blinked at each other for a moment. "What are you doing over there?" he asked. "Catching up on the latest and greatest. There's a disposable, disappearing chat room for black hat hackers." "I won't ask if it's secure." "No," she agreed. "That would be condescending." "Do you want to try meditating again?" She gave a one-shouldered shrug. "I seem to suck at it." "Meditating?" "Being out here." She made a half-hearted gesture at the laptop. "Easier to be online. I feel real in there." "But it's not," he said. "Real." "What is?" "Trauma." Her lips tensed until they went pale. "What's that supposed to mean?" "I don't ever have to know what happened to you in those foster homes," he said. "But you've got it inside you. It's holding on in your body."
"Why do you say that?"
"Because it's waiting when you close your eyes and get quiet."
"Bullshit. I just don't like sitting still."
He went over to his bed and sat with his back to the headboard. He stayed very still. "Fine," she said. "Fine." She logged out, bounced from chair to bed, crossed her legs. "Get relaxed, but not too relaxed," he said. "Become aware of any tightness or tingling. Rest your tongue on the roof of your mouth, your hands on your knees. Focus on the breath moving through you. Follow it and see where it takes you." He straightened his spine, pulled his shoulders back into alignment, made a 2-millimeter adjustment to the column of his neck. Slowly the laughter and music from outside faded. He became acutely aware of the pressure of the mattress beneath him, a twinge in his right shoulder, the scent of laundry detergent. He started to constrict his focus, the outside world irising shut. But he sensed an unease inside the room. Joey, rocking from side to side. She rolled her neck.
"Try not to squirm," he said. "I'm not squirming. Just keep coming back to your breath, and to sitting still."
She remained motionless, but her agitation grew, a physical force clouding the air between them. She exhaled sharply and flopped back. She stared at the ceiling. When she blinked, tears streamed down her temples.
She was breathing hard. Then she got up violently, the mattress springs whining, her bare feet hitting the floor with a thud. She rushed out, slamming the door behind her. Evan stared at the door. She'd caught him off guard, perhaps even more than when she'd broken his nose. He uncrossed his legs, stood up, hesitated. She wanted to be alone. Should he respect that? In this neighborhood? He reminded himself that she could take care of herself just fine. Somewhere outside, a car horn blared. He noted the concern swelling in his chest with each breath. An odd sensation. She was fine. But he wasn't. Already he was walking to the door and then moving swiftly through the outside corridor. The other apartment doors were closed now, the denizens busy inside from the sound of it. He swept around the other arm of the complex. No sign of Joey. He circled back around the pool, the same young men telling the same stories, smoking different blunts, not noticing him or anything else. His chest tightened even more as he cut between the cars in the parking lot. Still, no Joey. He jogged up the block. A pimped-out Camaro drove past, windows down, rap booming from the radio. Eminem was cleaning out his closet and doing a damn fine job of it. She wasn't at the minivan. She wasn't visible from the next intersection, or the one after that. He checked the roam zone. She hadn't called. Nor had Javier. His worry compounded when he considered what he'd do if Javier decided to contact him now. "Sorry about your gang situation, but I'm busy running around Virginia trying to prevent a boy's execution, chess matching with the world's most lethal assassins, and my sidekick just went missing." Sidekick. The word had tumbled naturally into his thoughts. He cut over one block, walked back across cracked sidewalks, pit bulls gnashing at him from behind fences. Activity swirled inside an abandoned house, unsavory customers visible through the missing windows and front door. Evan strode across the gondoseed front lawn and through the rectangular hole where the front door used to reside. His boot crushed the shards of a dropped crack pipe. Half the back wall was missing, bodies milling 10 deep in the packed living room. A couple was having sex on a couch shoved against one wall, their pale skin nearly glowing in the darkness. Evan shoved through toward the backyard. "Hey, fucker, you'd best watch where you—" Palm, jaw, floor. The guy dropped as if brought down with a lasso, and Evan broke through the remaining fringe of bodies. More faces, more hands clutching crinkled brown paper bags, more glass pipes. A fire leapt inside an enormous clay pot, casting irregular light across bare midriffs, shaved skulls. A guy with glasses missing one lens. No Joey. Evan cut up the side yard, jogged back to the apartment complex, his stress quickening. The guys remained on the lawn chairs, the smell of weed contact high thick in the corridor. The door to the rented room was open. Evan jogged forward, hand resting on the grip of the skinny Ares shoved into his waistband. He came around the doorway, stepping inside, ready to draw. Joey stood in the middle of the room, shoulders hunched, her face in her hands. Her back shuddered. He heeled the door shut behind him. "Joey?" She wheeled on him. "Where were you?" She came at him, striking blindly. "Why'd you leave me here? I got back and you weren't here. Why weren't you here?" He retreated, but she launched at him again, pounded with her fists, not like a trained operator, but like an angry 16-year-old. "You left me. I thought. He tried to gather her in, but she shoved him away. She slammed the closet door off its tracks, kicked the chair across the room, threw the lamp against the wall, knocking a divot through the paint. He moved to get out of her way, sat on the floor, and put his back to the door. She ripped the hanger pole off its mounts in the closet, kicked the bed hard enough that the metal feet gouged marks in the carpet, drove her hand through the drywall. Finally, she finished. She was facing away from him, her body coiled, her hands in loose fists at her sides. Blood dripped from a split knuckle. She walked over. She sat across from him, facing away from his bed. Her huge eyes were wet, her shoulders still heaving. "Where were you?" she said. I went to look for you. You weren't here.
He swallowed.
Tiene dos trabajos. Enojarse y contentarse.
She pressed both hands over her mouth. Tears ran over her knuckles, but she did not make a sound. They sat on the floor together for a very long time.
53. My breath on your neck. The next morning, Evan and Joey sat on their respective beds, spooning gas station-bought oatmeal into their mouths from styrofoam cups. He'd told Joey to put the room back together, and she'd done her best, but still the closet door was knocked off its tracks, the lamp shattered, the walls battered. The wreckage of the chair was neatly stacked in the corner, a pyre of kindling. It was a foregone conclusion that Susie Orton, cheery Airbnb patron, was going to have to retire her profile after they cleared out.
Look, Joey said, sorry I kinda freaked out last night. It's just... I was...
Her phone gave a three-note alert, a bugle announcing the king. She thumped her styrofoam cup down on the nightstand, oatmeal sludge slopping over the brim, and swung off the bed into a kneeling position before her laptop at the desk.
A police cruiser hit on the plate, she said, her voice tight with excitement.
He leaned over her shoulder, saw a screen grab of the black Suburban captured by the light bar of a passing cop car. The SUV was parked in a crowded Food Lion grocery store lot, the GPS specifics spelled out below.
Damn it!
Joey nibbled the edge of her thumbnail. By the time we get there, they'll be gone.
No, he said. This is good. No one drives across town to get groceries.
She caught his meaning, nodded, and snapped her laptop shut. They threw their stuff together in less than a minute. Before heading out, Evan left 10 crisp $100 bills on the floor, beneath a fist-size hole punched through the drywall. He started at Food Lion and drove in an expanding spiral, creeping through increasingly rough neighborhoods. A few miles along their winding path, he pulled abruptly to the curb. Joey said, "What?" He pointed at a ramshackle single-story house a half block up that looked like most every other house they'd passed. A chunk of missing stucco on the front corner, planters filled with dirt, overstuffed trash cans at the curb. A tall rolling side gate had been turned impenetrable by green plastic strapping interwoven with the chain link. One of the gutters had come loose and dangled from the fringe of the house like a coal chute.
"I don't get it," Joey said.
"The trash cans," he said. "See those green plastic strips poking up?" She leaned toward the dash, squinting through the windshield.
"They match the fence filler."
"Right. Someone cut and installed that privacy screen on the gate this week." He unholstered his Aries and opened the door. "Wait here." He crossed the street, darted through front yards, hurdling hedges. He slowed as he came up on the house, keeping his arms firm but not too firm, the pistol pointed at a spot on the ground a few feet ahead of the tips of his boots. The gate was lifted 2 inches off the concrete to accommodate the wheels. Easing onto the edge of the driveway, Evan dropped to his stomach and peered through the gap. The driveway continued past the gate to where the yard ended at a rotting wooden fence. Parked halfway there at an angle was a black Suburban. Weeds pushed up from cracks in the concrete, brushing the vehicle's flanks, but they weren't dense enough to cover the license plate. VBK 5976. Next to it on the baked dirt of the yard were the second rented Suburban and a Chevy Tahoe. Evan withdrew. Jogging back up the street, he flicked a finger for Joey to get out. She climbed from her perch in the driver's seat, locking the vehicle behind her.
"It's there?"
she asked.
"It's there."
As they circled the block, he could hear Joey's breathing quicken. They cut through a side yard next to a partially burned house. The frame of an Eldorado rested on blocks in a carport that sagged dangerously on heat-buckled steel beams. They stepped carefully, moving into the backyard. A rear patio had served as a firebreak, preserving a yard filled with dead, waist-high foxtails. Evan and Joey waded into the weeds, their shoes crunching as they headed for the rotting wood of the rear fence. Though the fire looked to be a few days old, ash still scented the air,
the smell just shy of pleasing. The warped fence had plenty of cracks and crevices that provided a ready vantage across the target house's backyard. On what was left of the lawn, an old-fashioned round barbecue grill melted into a puddle of rust. The reddish tinge on the earth brought a host of associations to Evan, which he pushed aside, focusing instead on the house beyond. Plywood covered two of the living room's three windows. One sheet had been removed and set to the side, presumably to let in light. The high kitchen window over the sink had been left exposed, and the rear door was laid open. Paul Delmonico and Shane Shea, Vanskyver's freelancers, stood at semi-attention, focused on someone in one of the blind spots. Evan assumed the other two freelancers were holding down the front of the house. In the kitchen window, Thornhill's head was visible. A moment later, a woman stepped beside him, facing mostly away from Evan. Mid-length hair, confident posture, athletic shoulders that tapered to a slender but not too slender waist. Evan would recognize her bearing anywhere. Orphan V turned around. In the shaft of light falling through the kitchen window, she looked quite striking. As she murmured something to Thornhill, she reached over her shoulder and scratched at a spot on her back. Evan thought of the burned flesh beneath her shirt, and felt a jagged edge twist inside him. Palms pressed to the splintering fence, he breathed the rot of the wood and watched the freelancers watching whoever was in that blind spot, two attack dogs waiting for a command. Beside him, Joey shifted her weight uncomfortably, rolling one sneaker onto its outer edge. She was humming with nervousness. The person in the blind spot stepped out of the blind spot and into view. That broad form, the thin copper hair, the muscular forearms and blocky wrists. But it wasn't just Vanskyver who made Joey's breath hitch audibly in her throat. It was what he was carrying. David Smith's frail form draped across his arms. Vanskyver dumped the body onto a tarp on the floor. His arms were swollen with exertion, bowed at his sides. The lines on the right side of his face caught the shadows differently. Perhaps scarring. Perhaps a trick of the light. Evan hadn't laid eyes on him. Not directly, since they'd shared a tense drink in Oslo nearly a decade ago. Seeing him now in the stark light of day, Evan felt emotions shifting along old fault lines. They'd spent so many years circling each other from the shadows that some small piece of Evan wondered from time to time if he'd conjured Charles Vanskyver entirely. But there he was, in the flesh, and the body of the boy who used to be David Smith. "He's dead," Joey said. Despite the cool December air, sweat sparkled across her temple, emotion flushing her cheeks. Staring at the motionless, slender form on the tarp, Evan felt heat pulse in his windpipe, fired by a red-hot coal lodged in his chest. He pushed away from the fence, looked down at the tips of his boots. He pictured the crowded bunks of room 14 at McClare Children's Mental Health Center, a Lego rebel riding a snow speeder across a rusting radiator. Jor-El, too smart for his own good. In another life, Jor-El would be a lawyer, a philosophy professor, a stand-up comedian. In another life, David Smith would be sitting down to dinner with a real family. In another life, Jack was still alive, and he and Evan had plans on the books to share a meal in a two-story farmhouse in Arlington. "Wait," Joey said. "Evan, he's breathing." Evan's head snapped back up. He watched as the boy stirred and rolled onto his side. Evan's jaw had tightened. That red-hot coal singed the inside of his throat, fanned with each breath. "We have to get him." "There are three orphans and four muscleheads in that house," Joey said, "armed to the teeth. And we're out here in the weeds with your girly gun."
"Yes."
"So how do you plan on getting to him?" Evan fished the Samsung Galaxy from his pocket.
"By telling Vanskyver where we are."
He thumbed the signal application. A moment later, a xylophone chime of a ringtone carried to them on the breeze. Evan put his eye to a knothole and peered into the house. Vanskyver lifted the phone from his pocket and looked down at the screen. Candy and Thornhill alerted to his expression and went to him, the three of them standing in a loose huddle by the kid's body. They were in close enough proximity that a tight grouping of 9mm rounds could take them down. If they weren't orphans, Evan might consider hurdling the fence and rushing the house to get within range, but he knew he wouldn't get 3 steps past the rusting barbecue before they alerted to him. Van Sciver's thumb pulsed over the screen, and he lifted the phone to his face. Evan watched his lips move, the familiar voice coming across the line on a half-second delay. There was a lot of encryption to squeeze the single syllable through. X. Now you're catching on. I suppose you're calling about the boy. From the remove of one backyard and a disintegrating fence, Evan watched Van Sciver turn. Through the phone he heard the rustle of the big man's boots on the tarp. Candy had one hip cocked, directing the two freelancers to keep eyes up. Thornhill's muscles coiled, thrumming with energy, ready to go kinetic. He walked to the front of the house to alert the others. Van Sciver said, "You took one of mine." Joey must have heard the words from the receiver, because she stiffened at the mention of herself. "So I took one of Jack's," Van Sciver continued. "But he doesn't have Joey's weaknesses. He's like you and me. Tabula rasa. Jack found him and tucked him away somewhere safe. Now we have him. Like a gun without a serial number." "Disposable," Evan said. "You'll train him up. Spend him when you need to." "That's what we're for, Evan. Remember?" "Orphan J, Orphan C, Orphan L, Jack, Joey, and now this boy. All to get to me." "That's right." Candy was close at hand, hanging on Van Sciver's words, her lips pursed into a shape evocative of a kiss. But the eyes told a different story, of dark appetites unsatiated. Van Sciver's stare picked across the backyard and snagged on the rear fence. His eyes looked lopsided even from this distance, and it took Evan a moment to realize that it was because the right pupil was larger. Evan could have sworn Van Sciver was looking through the knothole right at him. It was impossible, of course, and yet Evan still pulled back a few inches from the wood. He knew that look, the same one Van Sciver used to issue when they gathered on the cracked asphalt of the basketball courts across from Pride House, a group of punk-ass kids with nothing to do and nowhere to go. A look like he was trying to see inside you. Evan took a breath, eased it out. "How about you get around to telling me what makes me so special?" Again he watched Van Sciver's lips move, the dubbing off from the voice coming through the line. "You really haven't put it together?" Evan didn't reply. Van Sciver laughed. "You don't really think this is just personal?" Evan didn't indulge him. Their earlier conversation played back in his head. "You have no idea, do you, how high it goes?" "It's amazing," Van Sciver said. "You don't even know how valuable you are." He pivoted slightly, meeting Candy's loaded gaze. She was clearly read in on whatever reason had escalated the hunt for Evan. Van Sciver's shoulders rose, his neck corded with muscle, his blocky hand firming around the phone. "They sent me to the sand pit a few times, needed to pick another name off that deck of playing cards. I caught up to him in Tikrit. Shitty little compound in Katasia, jungle gym bars and rusty Russian munitions. We'd already rained down with aerial munitions, but Habib's still strolling around his little fenced-in yard, lord of his domain. I was set up with my 300 Win Mag on a rooftop at 1,200 meters, ready to shoot the dick off a mosquito, and Habib comes around the yard into sight. I have the head shot clear as day. But at the last minute, I move the crosshairs from his face to his arm. Take it off at the shoulder." His breath came as a rush of static across the receiver. "He'll bleed out, right? But I wanted it to be slow. Guess why?" Evan said, "To draw out the other targets." "No," Van Sciver said, his voice simmering with latent rage. "Because I wanted him
to know.
Evan let the silence lengthen. Then Skyver said, When I catch up to you, Evan, you're gonna have time also to know. All your questions, I'll fill you in at the very end, when you're bleeding out on the ground at my feet. His whole body had tensed, but Evan watched him try to relax his muscles now, a snake uncoiling. I am hot on your trail, Van Skyver said. And I'm hot on yours, Evan said, the Samsung pressed to his cheek. Can you feel my breath on your neck? Van Skyver's expression turned uneasy. He walked into the kitchen, peered out the window into the backyard once more. Is that so?
Yeah,
Evan said. We've got a lock on the kid. Next to him, Joey bristled. Her hands flared wide.
What are you doing?
But he held focus on the house. Van Skyver muffled the phone against his shoulder and snapped his fingers. The freelancers readied M4s and spread around the interior, taking up guard positions. Thornhill drew an FNX-45 from his hip holster and ambled out of sight. Van Skyver kept his pistol in his underarm tension holster. He moved the phone back to his mouth.
If you want him, he said, come and get him.
Evan said,
okay,
and hung up.
What the hell? Joey hissed. Now they're on high alert. If they come back here...
Evan pulled out his roam zone, pressed three buttons, held up a finger to Joey while it rang. A feminine voice came over the line. 911.
Yeah, hi, Evan said. I work at the McClare Children's Mental Health Center in Church Hill. A man and a teenage girl have been lingering around the building all morning. One of our nurses said she saw that the man had a gun. Can you please get someone here right away? Hang on. Shit. I think they're approaching.
He hung up. Joey gestured for him furiously, pointing through the gap. Crouching, he peered again through the knothole. Candy swung through the kitchen, heading for the rear of the house. He couldn't see her body until it filled the doorway to the backyard. She had an M4. She moved swiftly across the porch and strode out to recon the yard. Joey backpedaled, her sneaker tamping down the foxtails loudly. She cringed at the noise, wobbled to avoid landing her other foot. Evan shot out a hand and grabbed her arm. She was frozen with one leg above the dead weeds. The brittle foxtails stretched all around them, an early warning system that would broadcast to Candy any move they made. Firming his grip on Joey's biceps, Evan swung his head back to the fence. He peered through the knothole, now a foot away. The perspective had the effect of lensing in on the yard. Candy, 20 yards away, and closing. With his free hand, Evan reached down and tugged his Ares 1911 from the holster. He kept his eyes locked on the knothole. Candy passed the rusted barbecue, the bore of the M4 facing them, a full circle of black. She swept toward the fence. Evan lifted the pistol and aimed through the silver dollar size hole. 54. Illegal in police departments from coast to coast. Evan's torso twisted, pulled in two directions, Joey's weight tugging him one way, his drawn Ares aimed the other. He felt a pleasing burn across his chest, ribs unstacking, intercostals stretching. If he pulled the trigger, he'd drop Candy, but the sound would alert Van Skyver and his men. Then he'd be in retreat with a 16-year-old girl and 8 in the mag, pursued by 6 trained men armed with long guns. Not ideal. But he'd handled not ideal before. Candy neared the rear fence. He sighted on the hollow of her throat. Her critical mass filled the knothole, blocking out everything else. His finger tightened on the trigger.
V!
Van Skyver's voice from the house halted her in her tracks. She pivoted, M4 swinging low at her side. She was no more than 4 feet from the fence line. The gun was steady in Evan's hand, aimed at the fabric of her shirt fluttering across her back. He'd punched the round through her marred flesh, 2 inches right of her spine, beneath the blade of her shoulder. Despite Evan's grip, Joey wobbled on her planted foot, her other arm whipping high as she rebalanced herself. In Evan's peripheral vision,
He sensed her raised boot brush the tips of the foxtails. "We just picked up a 911 call," Van Sciver shouted across the yard. "Armed man and a teenage girl at McClare Children's Mental Health Center."
"They're one step behind," Candy said. "Let's meet them there."
Candy jogged back toward the house, her figure shrinking in the telescope lens of the knothole. As she receded, Evan released Joey's arm. Joey eased her other foot down to the ground, the weeds crackling softly. She came to Evan's side to watch through the fence. At the house, Van Sciver swung out of the rear door, keys in hand. Thornhill and Candy flanked him across the yard, Delmonico and Che in their wake. The two other freelancers had been drawn onto the back porch by the commotion.
"Hang a rock. Wipe the notebook," Van Sciver called out to the bigger of the two, a hefty guy with an armoring of muscle layered over some extra girth.
"Yes, sir."
"Bauer, eyes on the front."
Bauer, a lanky man with sunken eyes, scratched at his neck.
"Yes, sir."
Across the yard, Delmonico slid back the gate, the rusty wheels screeching. Van Sciver and Candy hopped into the Tahoe, Che and Thornhill into the nearest Suburban, and they backed the SUVs out. The Suburban idled in the driveway, waiting on Delmonico as he closed the gate, wiping himself from view.
There was a moment of stillness. Hangabrock's head tilted back as he sniffed the ash-tinged air. And then he went into the house again.
Bauer met him in the kitchen with a red notebook. It looked just like the notebook Evan had found in the Portland headquarters. Hangabrock carried it into the kitchen. Then he placed it in the microwave. The lit carousel spun, rotating the notebook. Joey looked over at Evan, her brow furrowed.
Bizarre.
As Bauer disappeared once again to the front of the house, Hangabrock walked into the living room and stared down at David Smith. The boy lay quietly, half off the tarp, his cheek smashed to the floorboards, his thin shoulders rising and falling. Hangabrock slung his M4 and sat on the high end of the decline bench, a bored expression on his face. He dug something out from beneath a thumbnail. Joey leaned toward Evan, her sneakers crackling in the weeds.
"There are still two of them," she whispered.
Evan smiled. Evan didn't have a suppressor. A gunshot would alert the neighbors. He would have to use his hands. He moved silently along the side of the house and came up on the open back door. Hangabrock remained on the decline bench, gazing blankly through the sole uncovered rear window into the yard. A dark hall led to the front of the house and to Bauer. Evan waited. After a time, Hangabrock stood and stretched his back, his shirt tugging up and showing off a pale bulge of flesh at the waistband. He gave a little groan, resting his hand on the butt of the carbine. He walked to the window. Over his shoulder, Evan's reflection ghosted into sight in the pane. Evan's right elbow was raised, pointing at the nape of Hangabrock's neck. The big man's eyes barely had time to widen before Evan reached over his crown, grabbed his forehead, and yanked his head back into his elbow. The bony tip of Evan's ulna served as the point of contact, crushing into the base of Hangabrock's skull, turning the medulla oblongata into gray jelly. A reinforced horizontal elbow smash. The man didn't fall so much as crumple. Evan stripped the M4 cleanly from Hangabrock as he dropped out of the sling. The thump made a touch more noise than Evan would have liked. He tilted the M4 against the wall and moved quickly down the hall. He got to the entryway just as Bauer pivoted into sight, rifle raised. Evan jacked Bauer's gun to the side, the man's grip faltering. He spun Bauer into the momentum of the first blow and seized him from behind, using a triangular chokehold made illegal in police departments from coast to coast. Evan bent Bauer's head forward into the crook of his arm, pinching off the carotid arteries on either side. Bauer made a soft gurgling sound and sagged, heavy in Evan's grip. Evan lowered him to the floor. 13 down. 12 to go. Evan walked back to David Smith. Crouching, he found a strong pulse on the boy's neck. He noticed a slit on the forearm, recently sutured, but otherwise the kid looked fine. He'd probably gotten sliced during the snatch, and Van Sciver had patched him up. The room looked to have been recently cleaned, but despite that, a bad odor lingered. Sporadic water spots darkened the walls, the plaster turning to cottage cheese. Scrub marks textured the floorboards.
The bristles had left behind a thin frost wake of bleach, the white edged with something else not quite the shade of coffee. Evan knew that color. He stepped into the kitchen. The glass plate was still spinning inside the microwave. He stopped the timer, grabbed the red notebook from inside, and shoved it into his waistband. He went back to David Smith, slung him over his shoulder, and walked out the front door into broad daylight. Joey had the minivan on the move already, easing to the front curb. The side door rolled back. Evan set the boy down gently inside, climbed in, and they drove off. 55 vanished in plain sight. They were halfway across Richmond when the kid woke up. Puffy lids parted, revealing glazed eyes. David Smith lifted his head groggily, groaned, and lowered it back to the bench seat of the minivan. Joey peered down from the passenger seat, concerned. "He's up. Pull over." Evan parked across from a high school that stretched to encompass the entire block. He killed the engine and checked out the surroundings. On the near side of the street, magnolias fanned up from a verdant park, their crooked branches bare and haunting. A man-made river drifted beneath the low-swooping boughs, white water rushing across river stones to feed an elaborate fountain at the center. There were speedwalkers and young couples and dogs chasing frisbees. A good amount of activity to get lost in. Evan leaned around the driver's seat to peer back at the boy. "You're okay, David," he said. "You're safe now." The boy blinked heavily.
"That's not my name."
"We know it is. We know you were trained by Tim Draker, that you had to go on the run, that Jack Johns hid you in that mental health center until you were kidnapped yesterday."
"Is this another mind game?"
the boy asked. "What?"
"You know, like seer stuff. You take me, mess with my head, see what I'll give up."
Evan said, "Not even close." A bell warbled, and kids started streaming from the school, pouring down the front steps, zombie mobbing the minivan on their way to the park. The added movement was good, even easier to blend into. Joey pointed to the sutured slice on the back of David's left forearm.
"What happened there?"
The boy regarded the cut and his arm as if he'd never seen them before.
I don't remember.
He tried to sit up, wobbled, finally made it. His face was pale, his lips bloodless. He shook his head.
"I don't feel so good."
"Let's get him some fresh air," Evan said, already stepping out into the sea of high schoolers. He slid back the side door and Joey helped David out. "Off the street," he said, and she nodded. They joined the current of kids flowing through the magnolias and across the park. Kids clustered to take phone pics and compare the results. Braying laughter, deafening chatter, a cacophony of ringtones. Evan led Joey and David, cutting between clicks. They stopped at the fountain. Students rimmed the encircling concrete. The air smelled of chlorine, hairspray, the skunky tinge of pot. A family of black ducks paddled across the still water at the fountain's edge. Buried treasure glimmered beneath, copper wishes waiting to be fulfilled. No one took note of the three of them. They'd vanished in plain sight. Color crept back into David's cheeks, his lips pinking up. He sat on the rim of the fountain, poked at the sutures.
"Looks like you were drugged,"
Joey said. His head bobbled unevenly.
"But why? I would have done whatever."
To one side, a crew of girls crowded around a ringleader with gel nails and green and white Stan Smiths. Lauren's totally gonna uninvite her from her Sweet 16 because, get this, she posted a pic of herself with Dylan in the back seat. They were just sitting there, but still. Hashtag trashy. This doubled the girls over, leaning on each other, weak with laughter, retainers gleaming. Their sneakers matched. Their haircuts matched. Their backpacks were mounted at their heels, different shades of the same Herschel model. Joey regarded them as one might a herd of exotic animals.
"Where's that guy?"
David asked.
"The big guy."
Joey refocused. "We got you from him."
"But he was gonna put me in that program. The one Tim was training me for."
David's gaze sharpened.
"Wait. Where's Tim? What happened to him?"
Evan said,
They killed him. David's mouth opened, but no noise came out. Evan crouched and set his hands on David's knees. We're going to make sure you're taken care of. Evan, Joey said. Evan! She'd clocked something at the park's perimeter. He picked up her gaze, spotting a black Suburban flickering into view behind clusters of students and the skeletal branches of the magnolias. It turned at the corner, creeping along the front of the high school. Shea at the wheel, Delmonico in the passenger seat, Jordan Thornhill in the back, bouncing his head as if to music. Joey somehow had one of the Herschel backpacks at her feet, unzipped. She'd already taken out an iPhone hugged by a rubber panda case. She tapped in 911. When she put the phone to her ear, her hand was trembling. They watched the Suburban prowl. Evan popped the bottom two magnetic buttons of his shirt, creating an unobstructed lane to his hip holster. The breeze riffled the fabric, tightened his skin. Thornhill and the two freelancers would try to flush Evan, Joey, and David from the park. Presumably Candy and Van Sciver were in the surrounding blocks somewhere, lying in wait. There were at least 200 kids on scene. A lot of flesh to catch stray bullets. I just spotted two fugitives, Joey said into the phone. Paul Delmonico and Shane Shea. As she named the high school and the park, paranoia bubbled up in Evan. He looked down at the slit on David's arm. Dried blood at the seam. Fresh sutures. Good placement. David blinked up through bleary red eyes.
What? What is it?
Come, Evan said. Now. As the Suburban drifted around the block, Evan circled to the far side of the fountain, keeping the spouting water between them and their pursuers. Joey brought the stolen backpack, still talking into the phone. There's kids all over here, and those guys are armed, and they're going to start shooting people. The panda phone case undercut the gravity of her tone, lending a surreal touch to the situation. Youthful movement churned all around. Two skinny kids sat cross-legged at the base of a tree, testing each other with math equations on flashcards. An older kid in an artfully torn flannel snickered with his compatriots.
Dude, I am so going to hit that this weekend.
One of the girls on the far side of the fountain had produced a selfie stick, and she and her friends were leaning together, making pouty lips, adjusting wisps of bangs. A half block away, three assassins glided down the street. Joey hung up, pocketed the ridiculous pantaphone.
Let's see how long it takes PD to respond to prison escapee pedophile cop killers in a park full of children.
David said, What?
She shushed him.
Through a jetting arc of water, they watched the Suburban ease into a parking spot a half block behind their minivan. Evan did a full 360. Nothing but kids on the grassy expanse, the weaving faux river, more trees. Van Sciver and Candy weren't showing themselves. They didn't have to. All around the park's periphery, parents were picking up their kids, the Suburban, just another SUV. Its doors opened, and the three men got out. They stood at the curb, scanning the park. Joey said,
How?
His forearm, Evan said. She looked down at the 4-inch seam sliced through David's flesh.
Wait, David said. What do you mean?
They chipped you. Thornhill's stare moved to the fountain and locked onto them. He rocked back on his heels, a small display of delight, and said something to Delmonico and Shea. All three sets of eyes pegged them now. They were about a quarter mile away. The spray beneath the bent spurt of fountain caught the fading sunlight, suspending a rainbow in its web of drops. Evan glared through the gauzy veil of color. The men glared back. Except Thornhill. Thornhill was grinning. They stepped forward in unison, cutting through groups of students. Delmonico and Shea wore trench coats. With each step, the barrels of their M4s nosed forward into view beside their knees. Thornhill angled away from them behind one of the gnarled tree trunks, opening up a second front. Evan slid his hand through the gap of his shirt, clenched the grip of the Ares, and readied to draw. 56. Crimson Firework. As Delmonico and Shea started for the fountain, Thornhill sidled farther to the side, dividing Evan's attention. Even from this distance, Evan could see that his lips were pursed. Was he whistling? Evan tightened his hand around the pistol. David bristled at his side. Though the men were still way across the park, Joey had instinctively slid 1 foot back and